Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, a professional blog, or an online store, it is all included with your Squarespace website. Start your free trial today, squarespace.com. Offer code is CanadaLand. You will get 10% off of your first purchase. So, I went to this secret meeting of very powerful people where we all got together and plotted the future of the Canadian media. Okay, that's a bit hyperbolic. They're not that powerful. These are the people who run Canadian news organizations, but, you know, and it wasn't that secret. I mean, the Canadian press reported on it. I'm talking about it now, so how secret can it be? It's semi-secret. I can't tell you who was there, and I can't tell you who said what. All of that is protected by Chatham House rule, which I agreed to observe and which I looked up. Not necessarily in that order. You know what? Let me back up here. Here's what's going on. The Trudeau government is considering doing something about the crisis in Canadian news. They have contracted a nonpartisan think tank, the Public Policy Forum, which is headed by former Globe and Mail editor-in-chief Ed Greenspan, to conduct this national research project into what, if anything, should be done about the fact that the Canadian news business is dying. Should the government just stand back and let it burn to the ground, or, you know, should they get in there and do something? To answer this question, the Public Policy Forum invited to this semi-secret meeting everyone who is currently engulfed in flames, plus a few digital news startups, including Canada Land. Now, I have told you a bit about this before, but I haven't been able to say much until today, because today, former Globe and Mail editor-in-chief Ed Greenspan will be with me. Wait for it. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Michelle Poles, Scott Harris, Allison McNeil, JD, Jeff Slomkowski, Michael Vernon, Andrew Slavin, and Sarah O'Neill. Sarah, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because Canada Land provides something unique compared to traditional news. There's no agenda, just honest reporting, accountability, and awareness.
This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We got a tour of their facilities in their downtown Toronto campus, and I was blown away by the heroic work that these people are doing. They are saving lives every day. I know people whose lives were saved, and they just really care about the dignity of the people who turn to them for help. Look, we talk a lot about these issues on Canada Land. We talk about the crisis that is claiming 20 lives every day in Canada to drug overdoses. But we don't give you a lot of options of what you can do about it. CAMH is an option. CAMH desperately needs resources that they directly put into their work, saving lives and turning people's lives around. Listen, May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. This is when they need your help the most. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode is also brought to you by Squarespace. Maybe you've been putting off getting a website or, you know, fixing your crappy old website. If you have been meaning to put a polish on your online presence for, you know, your landing page, a gallery, your professional portfolio site, or, you know, if you actually do business online, if you're running an online store or anything else, Squarespace is a really good solution to your problem. You can get this up and running very quickly. You can pick a beautiful template from their library of templates and very quickly and very easily, and it's kind of fun, personalize that site, make it your own site, and have just a completely contemporary, responsive website that'll do anything you need it to do. If you have this problem of needing a website or a better website and you need it solved, why not just go and check it out? Start a free trial today at squarespace.com. Start playing around with it. Use the offer code CanadaLand at checkout. You will get 10% off of your first purchase. You run the Public Policy Forum. Media Math is about figuring out how to best serve the public and ensure that the public has journalism. Why is the process so private?
Well, I don't think the process is private at all. First of all, here I am talking to you on a podcast to, what, millions of listeners, Jesse?
Millions and millions.
Okay.
Tens of thousands of listeners.
And maybe this will be, you know, the breakthrough podcast. I'm not sure. And, you know, we will release a public report. We will have a symposium, some roundtables that we're doing across the country where we feel that people are a little bit more open to talk about you know, the issues as they see it in an atmosphere in which it's on the record, but not for attribution, if you will. What you have referred to here is Chatham House rules, and I think read the definition out of Wikipedia or something, yes.
Yes, well, and thank you for familiarizing me with it. I had to figure out what I was getting myself into. And so we can talk about what was said, but we can't talk about who said it. And the reason for that, as you explain, is that people would feel a little bit more inhibited about actually engaging in the process openly. I have to kind of unpack that a little bit because we are talking about the people who I cover. These are, without naming any names, I don't think I'm breaking Chatham House rule to say that, at least at the roundtable that I attended, most, if not all, of the major news organizations were represented at very high levels. It would be important to them for their comments to not be attributed. I have to kind of question that and say, okay, well, here we are engaging in a process to determine what, if any, subsidies or policies the government should put in place to safeguard news journalism in Canada. And here are the people who run these news organizations who don't want to be quoted when it comes to their thoughts on whether or not the government should do that.
Well, you know, there's different venues in which to talk to people and reach people. I am, as you started off, the public policy forum. My goal here is to try to help us achieve if policy is required or if policy needs to be amended in some ways, you know, the best policies forward. To do that, I think, you know, I've got to understand the state of the industry, and by the state of the industry, you know, all aspects of the industry, from new startups, digital startups like your own, to, you know, 150-year-plus newspapers like the Globe and Mail. This doesn't stop journalism from doing its job. At the moment, I am a journalist, not practicing journalism, practicing public policy.
Right. And as a journalist and as an editor, you know that, you know, you'd rather have a quote attributed than a quote unattributed.
Yes, but you also probably know that you'd rather, you know, you as a journalist will talk to some people in the course of a story on background, and you'll talk to some people in the course of a story on the record. You know, in the stories I can think of that that you've been involved with breaking, you know, that's clearly been a rule. Why didn't you put those people on the record? I mean, it's the same kind of question, because you're trying to understand what's going on, and then you're going out and asking your questions as a journalist.
I don't mean to play dumb. I mean, like, I know why. If you were to say to the people who run news organizations, come to this meeting, it'll all be live streamed on Facebook as you make your case for whether or not your company should receive some sort of consideration from the government, they probably wouldn't come. They don't want to be seen that way.
Well, first off, let's unpack the idea of receive some consideration from the government.
So, okay.
So this is not an exercise in figuring out, you know, what size spoon we should feed, you know, a given media outlet. You know, that's not what this is about at all. What this is about is asking the question, and you know the three questions particularly that we're asking, you know, does the decline of traditional media pose a risk to the civic function of journalism, therefore the health of democracy, is question one. Question two, if so, are new digital media and new digital forms of communications filling that gap or likely to fill that gap in the near term? If not, is there a room for public policy? And what would that look like in as unintrusive a way as possible? So, you know, this is an exercise in, is democracy being ill-served by the difficulties that are being experienced in the media and the transition, because it's not all difficulties, there's wonderful opportunities being produced too, and the transition that we're going through in the media?
Yes, no, and no. So you could have just come to me and we would have...
very soon, and that's on the record too.
Well, I mean... It was so interesting to see how lofty some of these questions are. Is democracy being ill-served? And somebody there, and I'll sort of pepper our conversation with quotes that I won't attribute. Somebody said, we're not here to save the news industry. We're here to save democracy. I felt like I was at a meeting of the Justice League. I don't mean to be cynical. I do obviously think that democracy is best served by having journalists keeping government to account. And one thing that kept coming up is that, you know, right now there's no full-time reporter of the Saskatchewan legislature for the first time in anyone's memory. So there is a problem. I appreciate that this was, a process to address a problem. And I don't think that anybody could deny that we're at a low point in terms of feet on the ground doing the daily.
Okay, well, let's run with that for half a second, because you're a yes, no, no guy, which is an interesting configuration in a way. Yes, the civic function of journalism is being threatened from traditional media outlets.
Yes,
and therefore the health of democracy. No, digital is not yet filling that gap. No, I don't think there's a room for policy. You know, is your position?
I'll put an asterisk on the last one, but we'll get back to that.
Well, maybe the asterisk will, you know, take me out of my agony here. What do you mean by the asterisk?
Does the government have any role to play in addressing the problem that Canadians have fewer journalists serving them than ever before? Yes, I support public broadcasting, and I think
that is public policy.
That's right.
So you've now agreed to the principle of public policy. Now we have to figure out what kind of public policy is good public policy and what kind of public policy is bad public policy.
That's right. So
you're a yes. You are a yes, no, yes.
This is going to be easy. I will actually just be in agreement this whole time. We might not be, because I guess I agree with Andrew Potter, who I also participated, and I can disclose that he participated because he disclosed that, like me, he wrote about his participation in Media Math. He said at the end of this...
You want to tell people Andrew Potter is?
Andrew Potter, of course, is the former editor-in-chief of the Ottawa Citizen, who's now, I believe...
He's at McGill University now.
At McGill. He said at the end of this, there's probably going to be some pressure on the government to do something. partly because the decline of the news media does seem to be a real problem, but also because you don't launch these sorts of exercises without setting up the expectation that something will come of it. So the Heritage Ministry asked your think tank to conduct this entire process. That makes kind of common sense, horse sense to me. You don't go to a think tank and put resources behind that and make that publicly known if you do not have an appetite to address the problem, to create some sort of public policy solution, which I will further assume may include some form of subsidy. Especially because you're inviting the heads of all the news organizations to come and say, hey, do you think that the government should give you money or considerations? Of course, they're going to say yes. They're gasping for air right now. One kind of concern I had participating with this is that the problem, as it was most commonly expressed around the table, was that legacy media is really hurting and is facing this existential crisis. The problem from my viewpoint is that we have not seen the proliferation of new experimental models, new sustainable, smaller digital models. It just hasn't been happening in Canada anywhere near the same scale. And, you know, you've pointed out one of the reasons why. But to me, that's a bit more of an urgent problem.
So I couldn't agree more. And you know, you were one of six round tables, and you happen to be at the one because Toronto is the media capital of the country, and B, you happen to be a media owner yourself. You were at the one that probably had more media ownership around the table than might be at others. But we will be doing one in Regina, and you talked about the Saskatchewan legislature a few months ago and not having a full-time reporter, and that's an interesting question to explore local, regional realities around news. We'll be having not just a round table, but also a symposium in Vancouver that will be dedicated precisely to the question you're talking about innovation and digital media and why there isn't more of it and what it takes in a country, perhaps Canada's scale, Canada's size, with a greater difficulty to scale up to a size that can produce an economic return in Canada. So those are questions, you know, I agree completely. Those are very, very important questions for us.
Well, you know, startups always address the problems that are regional to them. And we've kind of heard this refrain that what you need to make it as a digital business is scale, and you need bulk visitors, bulk eyeballs to sell bulk ad sales if you're just doing a strict advertising.
If that's your model.
If that's your model. There were some companies represented there who actually are saying, you know what, there's no problem at all. There was one particular local digital news startup that said, when are legacy media newspapers consolidated and stopped serving these communities? That was our opportunity. And I can't say who they are. I'll leave it to them to out themselves. They said, we're doing great.
I'm sure if you invite them on the show, they'd be happy to tell their story.
Oh, I have, and they will be appearing, and we'll name them then. But they basically said that they've sold out 75% of their advertising revenue themselves, not through Google, because they are serving communities that legacy media is no longer serving. So they're in a similar position to me, which is, you know, we can talk about church and state and how there's a problem with government subsidizing the news business. And there is an inherent problem. We should talk about that. But I'm a much pettier, smaller person than that. And I run a news company. I don't want you being the government via this think tank or on the recommendations of a think tank to give me a dime if you're giving my competitor a dollar, right? I don't want money going. And I know how subsidies have worked in the magazine business. The small magazines get a pittance and the big magazines get six, seven figures a year. And so some of them. And so those same media brands are putting out podcasts. So I don't want the government to be subsidizing my competitor. If anything, if I'm going to be, as these businesses get more and more online, in direct competition with Canada's legacy news brands, it would be much better for me if they were allowed to just sort of play out. If they can't swim, we haven't taken any government money here. We're doing this and we're in the black. So why should a big company like that get underwritten by the government to come and try to put me out of business?
Well, I agree. I'm afraid we're not going to have a big argument about this. I think that, you know, so you now have revealed yourself as an interest at the table. You've got you know, your own economic interest, your own business interest.
Absolutely.
It makes you no different in some ways than the CBC as a petitioner, or the Globe and Mail and Toronto Star and Post Media's petitioners, or anyone else. Everybody's got their interests. My interest, if I may say, is you know, to have a very healthy ecosystem that serves democracy well. And you know, we actually at the moment probably have one of the best ecosystems that's ever existed. You know, people have a tremendous range of opportunity. Unfortunately, part of it is incrementally falling year by year by year. I don't know if it's imploding completely. There might be, there's bigger bursts along the way. Last January in Canada, we saw, major layoffs at Post Media, major layoffs at Rogers, the closure of the Guelph paper, the closure of the Nanaimo paper, the closure of the Toronto Star printing plant. All that occurred within a 10-day period. I think that was actually, a feeling of implosion occurring.
You think things have improved since then?
No, I'm not saying things. I'm saying that it's a more of an incremental degradation that's going on. You know, not ultimately a key point how quickly it's happening. That it's happening is the more important point. And so, I think our group's recommendations have to be, how do we have an ecosystem that works? Now, maybe the answer is in question two. Maybe it's, how do we help the digital players have, let's call it the journalistic scale for a moment, in order to do what they really can do? Maybe the answer's there. Maybe the answer is in slowing down the decline elsewhere or helping innovation there. I think the answer probably is certainly on the innovation side. I don't think the answer is in how to keep a totally uneconomic and perhaps irrelevant shipbuilding operation going. I don't think this is about how to perpetuate bad business models and losing business models. I think it's about how to serve democracy. And I should just clarify one point. We will make recommendations that will be released publicly, and the government will see them as well. We're not writing the government's policy for them. If they may adopt it, I hope it will be very well argued and very well analyzed and highly influential. They can sort of say, are you crazy? We have no interest in that.
Okay, they could say that. But my guess is that out of all of the different things that you might do, you'll probably come up with a series of recommendations that will be, a Canadian middle path, and the government will probably take that and forge some Canadian middle path policy that takes reasonable...
Let's wait and see. You're ahead of me. Maybe you're right. Maybe it will be a bland middle path. Maybe it will be more interesting. I'm not there yet.
The devil's in the details with these things. You can make it about innovation and not about propping up old business models, and then the old guys will just say, well, we're innovators now, so give us the money. And they'll put that innovation money towards, maybe things like podcasts. So, my spidey sense, of course, is tingling with all of this. The public is the biggest stakeholder, and this is not about, I would hope, propping up dying businesses, as you say. It is about making sure that somebody is keeping an eye on the store, that there are journalists keeping an eye on our institutions in this country. It felt a bit to me like getting the horse and buggy convention together to figure out what to do about cars.
You were there. I'll leave it for you to judge whether you're a relic of the buggy whip industry. You're the last gasp of the buggy whips or the cars.
Yeah.
History will figure that out. But, it's not the car industry, and it's not the buggy whip industry. It's the industry that informs people so they can make good democratic choices, whether in national elections or provincial elections or school boards or what goes on in the courts. They can be informed. They can be civically functioning within one another with that information. Now, the new ecosystem allows citizens to participate in a way that citizens never participated before. That's a great, great advance. For me, the kind of penny dropped in a way, and I can't remember if it was around 2011 or 2012 during the Arab Spring, when the Assad regime bombed a city called Homs, attacked a city called Homs in Syria. And 30 years earlier, father of Assad had perpetuated massacre in that same town. 30 years earlier, nobody was there to bear witness. In 2011-2012, the residents of that town uploaded thousands and thousands of videos.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of thought, well, which is the superior system here? Well, the superior system is having both systems. It's also that I can go read Patrick Martin in the Globe and Mail and understand not just what happened, but why is it happening? What does it mean? So I think we have a very rich system right now. As I say, part of it's in decline, and we're not sure that the other part will rise. Is the cake going to rise adequately on the other part? I think those are the challenges in front of us. And as you've appropriately put it, the people, the public, is who needs to be served here.
Let's talk about the CBC for a moment, because that seems like the obvious. There's a couple things that struck me as the obvious solution, and one is that we have this obstacle to charitable journalism, and that should be removed. And the other seems to be that the CBC has lost its way. We have already, as a country, decided that we do want to have taxpayer-subsidized journalism. And, you know, I'm not like an extremist with these things. It's not, I'm not like a laissez-faire libertarian, like hands off, let the chips fall where they may. If the news business has to be destroyed and everybody has to lose their job and the country has to be without journalistic representation for a few years, then fine. No, I mean, that is a problem. But we have baked in a solution to that problem. It's called the CBC. You ask Canadians why they support the CBC, those who do, and 85% of them say for news. But the CBC seems to be more interested in being a media brand than a public broadcaster. And the resources there are distributed throughout everything from, you know, sitcoms to children's programming to doing BuzzFeed-style clickable content. Would not a sound recommendation, and are you exploring a recommendation, to revisit and strengthen the CBC's mandate to help them refocus their efforts, that what we want them for is to make sure that we're never without news coverage in this country, like specifically like regional news coverage?
Well, I think I can say a couple of things that people have talked about in the roundtables about the CBC so far. And one of those things, and, you know, this is well-known outside of the roundtables too, you know, the publishers of newspapers are resentful that the CBC has created what they consider a newspaper itself online and is selling advertising that's competing with them. And they feel that, you know, publicly financed institution and public money is being used to compete against the publishing industry, the classic newspaper publishing industry, and that's harming them and taking money out of their pocket. So that's an issue that we've heard and that you're very familiar with.
Which I'm echoing in a sense with my podcast argument. I mean, and they are now selling ads on their podcast. So I think that's a sound argument. And you might say the CBC that people love best is CBC Radio 1 without ads. You know, maybe we should just pay the CBC to be a news service and strip them from the ability to sell advertising.
That's helpful to me. So
I'm here to help.
If you are here to help, you know, if you take the proposition of question one, that there is a decline in traditional media, and question two, that digital media is not yet ready, how do you see us solving this? Because now you're actually a public policy guy. You moved from no to yes about 10 minutes ago. We're now having a good conversation of yes. So seriously, what would you recommend as the course?
Very concretely, just as I've said, I think that we need to remove the obstacle to charitable and academic efforts to start up nonprofit models, because I think that some kinds of journalism, like investigative journalism, there just might not be a business model for it. But there's lots of things we do in society that we don't make money off of, that are not profitable, but we do them anyhow. And we find ways to accomplish that. And it seems that other countries are finding ways to accomplish journalism outside of a profit model, and we can't seem to get there here. So I think that we could stimulate that, you know, mostly by getting out of the way, but perhaps there are some ways that...
Is Canada Land a not-for-profit?
No, Canada Land is a for-profit business.
Okay. So for-profit models should exist sort of, beside non-profit models in what you're
Yeah. I kind of come from a startup mentality that we need to try not a couple of big experiments, start-touch-like huge gambles, but we need to do dozens, if not hundreds, of experiments, small-time little experiments that
A thousand flowers bloom.
Let a thousand flowers bloom, yeah, which is what's happening around elsewhere, and we're seeing some of them are sustaining and some of them are scaling up massively, and others don't need to scale up. You know, if what I do does what it does but sustains in perpetuity, it'll be bucking the trend of so many Canadian digital news startups, which, you know, burn off a few million dollars in startup money and then disappear.
So what do you think when one of these legacy models does what La Presse has done, for instance? So they change their business model, you know, fairly radically, while still employing a fair-sized critical mass of journalists. Is that a good thing?
That's a great thing. I mean, if it's true, there's some skepticism about La Presse's numbers and whether or not they've pulled off exactly what they said they pulled off. But I think that newspapers do some things incredibly well, and the deep institutional knowledge that beat reporters have. And there's some projects that I think it would be wonderful if the dinosaurs could give birth to mammals. We haven't seen it yet. We've seen, I think, a lot of American news brands do a better job of at least really going for it and getting it. One thing I have to admit to you, and I don't imagine you'll be able to commiserate, given the station of many of the people in attendance, I was shocked by how rudimentary their understanding was of some of these changes and some of the things that were shared at that table, like, why don't we beef up copyright laws and have a SOCAN licensing system so that when people share news stories, the content creator can get compensated? And people don't have any respect for intellectual property anymore, and we're raising a generation of kids to just share content without without thinking about who the content creators are or whether those people get paid. I mean, these are the kind of noises the music industry was making like 10, 15 years ago. I was very surprised.
So are you shocked because they think that that's the answer to the problem? Or are you shocked because you don't think that there should be an ability to hang on to the copyright of the broadcast that we're going to do, or the podcast we're going to do here?
Well, of course you hold on to the copyright. I mean, I was shocked at their lack of understanding of how even copyright works, that copyright is somehow some magical system whereby these are the same companies, their own news brands, they have the ability to flip a switch and that would stop Google from showing their news stories in search results. They could flip a switch that would stop Facebook from aggregating the news stories. Their own teams desperately want their stories to be shared widely. And here they are bemoaning the fact that people are sharing their stories. And also with this very strange, I mean, we used to hear a lot more about Huffington Post aggregating people's stories, not giving credit, as if that's actually the threat. So, you know,
yeah, I think you touch on a very difficult issue there to figure out the balance of, if I'm going to figure out a middle of the road, you know, bland Canadian balance, as you suggested we might. But I think this has been a difficult question for publishers for a long time. You know, on the one hand, you want to hang on to your property that comes out of your organization, the stories and articles that separate you and distinguish you and make the contribution, and you want to make money off those to pay your journalists and to, you know, hopefully pay your owner some kind of return too, although I think very few owners are getting returns in Canada now. On the other hand, you need the reach, particularly of the large platforms, in order to get to as many people as possible. And so you don't really want them monetizing yourself, your content, without paying, but you feel the need to, to go where the audience is, and I think that's quite an interesting conundrum that one needs to get right now. There's different models in the country. The New Brunswick Telegraph Journal, not a well-known newspaper, and when it's known mostly for its ownership by the Irving family. But it has a hard paywall of the sort you're describing. There's not very many hard paywalls in Canada. You want anything in the New Brunswick Telegraph Journal, you're going to have to pay for it. You're going to have to take a subscription. You're not going to get any of it for free.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, that's the kind of model you were saying. Why don't they just lock it down? It'd be very interesting to understand that better and understand how it works and whether understand it, if it can work in a place like New Brunswick that's more contained but can't work in a place like Toronto where there's a great deal more media choice. I think the general proposition that that some people talk about, you know, let's just take it from you or me as journalists. You know, we find out a story, we create a story. Let's say we're just our own independent operators, and you, in a sense, are, although you have, you know, people you employ, but you are. Well, you don't want just anybody grabbing it and using it and selling advertising against it without your permission. I guess that makes some sense, it seems.
Oh, sure, for people to sell advertising against my content. But, I mean, that is not really the issue when you have, as you say, these brands that want the exponential sharing effect. They want the bulk eyeballs that a platform like Facebook can provide. So they allow Facebook to share their content, and they basically enter into a profit-sharing deal. Now, some people would say that in doing so, they've done a deal with the devil. It's suicide. If you hand distribution over to a company like Facebook, you're done. You've lost all power, and you'll always get the short end of the stick. And I think that actually is... I mean, you bring it up, you know, a great example. Small regional newspapers can do a hard paywall. Basically, they found the market for their news. They have introduced the idea that their news has value. They've put a number on that value, and they've had a conversation with their market. The market has said, okay, we'll pay for this, and they, you know, I hope that they're sustaining with that. And that can work in an instance where that newsreader can't get that news from anyone else. A brand like the Globe and Mail, they could do a wonderful series on the Olympics, but they're going to have a harder time selling that behind a paywall because you can get Olympics coverage from anywhere. I mean, we're really just talking about value.
Right. We're talking about the ability to break out your own niches.
Yeah.
And to, I think, dedicate enough resources to those niches where you think that you can be distinctive in that marketplace. How can you turn that into a revenue-generating property that helps support, presumably, the journalism that we all need? Because, you know, at the end of the day, we talk about the public, and it's really the relationship between journalists and the public. It's the information between the information flow and the public that's important. So, you know, I think there's some news organizations that have a more natural geographic ability to do that. There may be some who have subject matter that's very good. There may be some non-news, you know, some upstart organizations like, you know, who may, you know, say, okay, we can really do the Toronto Blue Jays better than anybody in the world, and actually people come pay us to do that. Or we can do media coverage, because really nobody's actually doing that in a hard-hitting way, and people are interested in that. You know, one of the questions is, will those, what you describe as legacy companies, and you know I prefer the word incumbent companies. Legacy sounds like, you know, it's their death warrant is written already.
Oh, I know what it sounds like.
And I don't think that's necessarily so.
Right.
You know, are they going to be able to recreate themselves?
Right. And I think that that was part of my concern with this whole process. If the question is, will we still have journalism in this country after this process works itself out that we're going through right now? Undeniably, I think the answer is yes, we will have journalism. And perhaps it needs some kind of artificial stimulation, perhaps it doesn't. But if the question, how do we sustain journalism, gets interpreted as how do we sustain post-media, or how do we sustain the Globe and Mail, how do we sustain the Toronto Star, then my fear is that 5 or 10 years down the line, or even sooner, when the rest of the world has figured out that the newspaper is not necessarily the vessel for news of the future, same way that the horse and buggy, we still have transportation, even though we got rid of a technology, that Canada, and you know, I said this at the roundtable, that Canada might become some sort of bizarro Galapagos island where we have artificially sustained these incumbent brands which inhibit, which stop these experimentations. And you know, what Potter concluded with is, he said, you know, what the government should do above all is avoid doing anything that will hinder the ferocious process of creative destruction that needs to take place. Worse than doing nothing would be a system that bakes in the status quo. That's my fear. That's why I'm giving you such a hard time in this sweaty little studio.
I don't feel like you're giving me a hard time.
And
Justin,
you're being very generous with your time. And you're the only person who, you know, I can't, you're the guy who I got to talk to. So I know that you're not advocating for one path or the other. But you can understand my concern that when I see these very powerful people getting together, I question the idea that what they would do as soon as they re-achieve sustainability would be to reinvest in civic journalism of the highest order. I think they just want to sustain. And what they showed me at that meeting was that they're not necessarily rolling with the times, as you might expect. And it is 2016.
Yeah. The future's much more likely to be in digital than it is to be in paper. Even when I was in the newspaper business, I understood that. Before I was editor-in-chief of the Globe and Mail, I was founding editor of GlobeandMail.com. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even back then, which is, you know, now 16, 17 years ago, you know, it was quite apparent that there was a different path that the future was going to take, and that traditional news organizations had better get on that path. And most of them have got on that path. The question is, have they got on it adequately? Have they got on it with actually really understanding it? Can they maximize it? Can they engineer it? And I think, you know, you would make an argument, no, that they haven't. And I think, you know, that's a very legitimate argument for you to make. You know, are some capable of finding that path? I imagine so. My interest in this report is that in this transition, that democracy doesn't become ill-served. And when you say that, it, you know, it, well, it's almost axiomatic that journalists will continue. Yes, some journalists will continue. But the ability of journalists to finance the more expensive forms of journalism, and the ones that really are pitting the journalist in some way against major concentrations of power, that's, as we know, expensive stuff. That's stuff that requires lawyers to make sure that you don't cross a defamation line. That, you know, takes, you know, 6 months, a year, perhaps a concentration.
It can be done.
It can be done, but it needs to be financed somehow or another.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just saying that we need to figure out collectively, with the wisdom of the people who are gathered around and are you know, discussing things at these round tables. And I welcome any of your listeners to send us, you know, their thoughts on how, you know, we will get to the stage and through the transition in a way that does serve democracy.
Oh, that's great.
Through
I didn't
collective
know there was
wisdom,
a public,
we're going to find the way.
Is the public submitting input on this? Is there like an email address or a program to solicit that kind of input?
They can send it to me directly.
Okay.
I will give you my email address, and you know, yes, they can send it to me directly. So I'll do that right now.
Let's do it now.
It's ed.greenspan, O-N, not A-N, at ppform.ca. PP as in public policy, form.ca.
I know that the process is not done yet. From where you're standing now, should we expect a recommendation that there be a financial subsidy for the news business?
You're right in the lead up to the question. The process is not done yet. I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. And you're aware that while we have these conversations, the BBC is beefing up their presence in Canada. New York Times Global is looking at this market. The regional restrictions that stop publishers from just scooping up Canada as a market don't exist online. And I think that there are all kinds of new players that are coming to the space.
Yeah, and you know, hopefully there's an answer in that in terms of them providing journalism and original journalism in this market, for this market, relevant to Canada as a polity, to Saskatchewan as a polity, to Regina as a polity, etc. But I'm not too sure that global players are going to pay enough attention to Canada to both put in a sufficient number of journalists to make a difference. Certainly they can make a difference at the margins, and stick with the program because this place matters to them. And, you know, I think we had a little warning shot with BuzzFeed, you know, set up an operation, hired some very, very good journalists, and then decided, well, you know, Canada's not that interesting to us. We're going to scale down.
Mm-hmm. The commitment is not as deep.
You know, we got to make sure. You know, we can't depend on commitments that aren't sustainable.
That is your Canada Land show. I hope you enjoyed it. Send me an email. I will read it and I will respond when I can. I'm at jesse@canadalandshow.com. We're on Twitter at Canada Land. Our website is canadalandshow.com. Our crowdfunding site is patreon.com/CanadaLand. Commons is back on Tuesday. Shortcuts is back on Thursday. This show is produced by Katie Jensen and syndication of Canada Land to campus and community radio stations across this country, which we offer for free. Well, that is handled by Russell Gregg. If you like what we do, please support us.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.